The Progressive Radio Network is a thinking person's network for our world's progressive visionaries and stakeholders and great thinkers to assemble on a commercial-free and listener-supported network. Our provocative hosts speak freely and passionately on intriguing and urgent topics such as health and news and politics and women's issues and philosophy and more that directly impact our lives. Progressive Radio Network takes chances. Our voices and ideas are not always welcomed by corporate media, so Progressive Radio Network is a very important outlet for these great thinkers.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Today, we're going to have a lot of different input from some critical thinkers. I'll be sharing some of my own commentaries, and I've decided not to have a guest today to give you an opportunity throughout the program to call in on the topic that has just been shared. For example, we're going to be having Sean Parker, the president of Facebook, talking about how it's ripping apart society. He and also one of the top originators of Facebook. Now, that's important that we hear this, because what we're going to hear from them is that they never really thought, even in the back of their mind, that maybe there could be some unintended consequences. Well, these are not unintended today. Facebook, Google, are new forms of, I would say, internet McCarthyism. They can libel you. They can slander you. They can have trolls all over you. They can try to destroy your reputation in any field, no matter what the actual reality, and nothing happens to the people doing it. Now try to correct it. People are being banned. In fact, as my Progressive Commentary Hour host, Professor Mark Crispin Miller, said, that there's over 200 really good groups. We're talking about groups such as Black Agenda Report and Truthdig and Consortium News and Chris Hedges. They're banned. They're censored. Their audience is shrinking. So what are we going to do about it? Also today, from Lauren Southern, a young woman who says, why I'm not a feminist. Now, we are starting a whole new series of what would be the third wave of feminism, and I believe it's an opportunity for men and women to share what we all need and what we all deserve, and that is equality in all things. Same pay, same opportunities. But for the last 40 years, my experience working with some of the most important feminists of the second wave, including Barbara Seaman, who co-authored a major book, 1,600-page book with me, on For Women Only, is that there's been excessive amount of shaming and blaming men for everything without looking at some of the actual problems men are having. And especially today, have you noticed how many young boys are being shamed for just being young boys? Rambunctious, they can be taken out of school for being too rambunctious or playing too rough. So the whole idea that there should be more feminization of young boys to align with more of the feminine constitution of women should be challenged. So now we have an opportunity to get some reasoned minds, not just those who used a legitimate movement. I really commend the feminist movement for all the good that it has done, for the attention that it has allowed us to pay, insisted we pay on issues that before had not been given the attention it deserved. But also, I have seen in all movements, the environmental movement and the health movement and the feminist movement, not all the people who have led those movements and decided what their talking points should be have themselves had any humanistic or spiritual values. Many have used the movements because they didn't have an authentic life. And they had an enormous amount of power. Hating in any movement is counterproductive to its ultimate goals. So we're going to have different voices, and we can agree or disagree with them in part or whole. But at least there's going to be a form, because unlike some Pacifica stations, unlike the mainstream media, I don't believe in censorship. I can disagree with you, but I'm not going to deny you a form. If you have something to say, say it, and then let us either agree or disagree on it. So we're going to do this. And then for the young man who has taken it upon himself to kind of be the leader of this new ban the guns, how much has he thought through the issue? What is he not bringing to the public for? He's using slogans. But how knowledgeable is he on the issue? And when all those people took the streets, we'd like to think that is the new movement. And he was saying, we are here with the new movement. Good. But don't make the mistakes that the Occupy Wall Street movement made. And I'll talk about some of those mistakes because I personally interviewed them. So it's not supposition, it's not hearsay, it's my interface with these people. One of the most unique opportunities was when we were in Washington, D.C. We had nearly 11,000 members of our movement who went down to Washington, walked to Washington, D.C. over a 10-day period, culminating in the park right across the street from the White House, and I think it's Vanderbilt Park. And one block away were the Occupy people, and I was one of the keynote speakers, and the largest part of that audience was my audience. I did my major speech in the park, Prospect Park, out in Brooklyn, and then everyone started on the walk. And I had to go from there right over, because we were also holding on the same day in the afternoon a close Indian point. And we had Helen Collicott, who flew in, and Michio Kaku, and Harvey Wasserman. So we were doing two things, and then right after that, we picketed in front of the governor's office. It was a busy day. But anyhow, 10 days later, we're all in Washington, and I walked over, and there were these people from the Occupy movement. I talked with them, and I said, look, we have 10,000 to 12,000 of us right now, just a block away. Please come over. Have yourself some good vegan food. We have portable showers out there for you. And we'll also make room for you to get up and make some comments about what you're doing and how we might be able to support you. And the person turned around and said, we don't need your help. Okay. Would you like some food? Nope. People have been giving us food. What do you do? Well, they were both teachers. So what are you doing here, staying in this tent? Well, solidarity for those who are oppressed. So you have an opportunity to share that message with a whole lot of people. And then they got some other people together, and instead of being welcomed there, it was, what are you doing in our movement? I'm not in your movement. I'm just offering you a platform. There are a lot of media over here. And then they all started to talk together, you know, that little thing they did. And one of them came over and was very aggressive and says, your generation had their turn and you made a mess of the world. I said, you mean I made a mess of the world? The 10,000 people over there made a mess of the world? All the other people I know from the civil rights movement and the women's movement and the human rights movement and the Back the Land movement, we all made a mess of everything? I said, aren't you conflating an issue? I said, we're here to make it a better world. We've made sacrifices. We respect those who have preceded us. We've used their platforms and their insights. Are you saying Martin Luther King made a mess? Malcolm X made a mess? Mahatma Gandhi made a mess? Who exactly are you condemning? So we had a little debate, and I filmed it. I've never shown that. And because once again, the left, just their head explodes because they lack any in temperament to understand parsing of issues. You're either for something or you're against it. That's the mindset today. this kind of new liberal McCarthyism. It is palpable. We're challenging it. I'm challenging it because it's not what the liberal community should stand for. But unfortunately, it has been hijacked. And we'll go into this in greater depth. I have a whole lot of people coming on who are going to challenge what has happened to our lack of freedoms, our inability to listen to other ideas, our intemperance when it comes to people who challenge us, or either we're all of one mind, an anarchistic mind, go to the streets, spit, scream, shout. Where does that actually change anything? It alienates. It doesn't change. The immaturity is substantial. So I walked back over to the park, and I went ahead and we did what we came from all over America to do, protest genetic engineering. The very genetic engineering crap food those people were eating, the good healthy vegan food they didn't want. We have a lot of divisiveness in our society. We have divisiveness at Pacifica, everywhere. What is the purpose of it? Who does it serve? We're going to discuss that today. And also, fella, you had a lot of young millennials at your march. So there was a interview of these millennials. And we're going to play that interview of all these people. What do they know about the world, the society? Because if you're going to be a part of a movement, shouldn't you understand past, context? So we have a lot to go into today. We're going to start with health and nutrition as we do every day. From the University of Manchester, they found that antibiotic use is increasing the risk of severe viral disease. Why? Well, according to this Washington University School of Medicine report, it's because the immune system is activated differently if the gut does not have a healthy microbiome. That's according to MD PhD Michael Diamond, a professor of medicine. If someone is sick with a bacterial infection, they absolutely should take antibiotics. But it's important to remember that there may be collateral effects. You might be affecting your immune response to certain viral infections. This was published in Cell Reports. So in lay language, what this means is this. We have been overtaking antibiotics in our food, those chickens that people eat, and beef, and pork, they're loaded with antibiotics. For almost any condition, a cold or flu, 33% of the prescriptions were for antibiotics, but colds and flu are from viruses, not bacteria. So what happens when you take an antibiotic? Now, if you needed one to save your life, absolutely. Any medicine that's been shown to save a life, stop a condition or improve a condition, I would support. But this shows you that over 10 million prescriptions were written each year where the doctor clearly knows it's not going to do a thing good, but he doesn't, or she doesn't say what does bad. You take antibiotics, you destroy all the good bacteria. And that allows bad bacteria, dangerous bacteria, pathogenic bacteria to proliferate. That makes you then more susceptible when you do come into contact with a virus. So you're destroying your immune system. And I would disagree with Dr. Michael Diamond, the MD, PhD, who's a professor of medicine. He says that, quote, they absolutely should take antibiotics when someone has a bacterial infection. Well, there's a whole school of thought that instead of just taking an antibiotic as the first course, take something that is antibiotic in action, but does not suppress the immune system, does not kill off the good bacteria. Colloidal silver, colloidal gold, wild oregano oil, olive leaf extract, pau d'arco, astragalus, echinacea, manuka honey, vitamin C, quercetin. Those are all very good, and bee propolis. But we're not using those natural and non-toxic, but naturally functional herbs. Instead, we're using antibiotics. I just wish that they would grow beyond the monotheistic paradigm they're in. From the University of Miami, regular and intensive meditation, over the course of a lifetime can help a person remain attentive and focused well into their late years. This is according to the most extensive longitudinal study to date examining a group of meditation practitioners. And this was published in the Journal of Cognitive Enhancement. And it just shows that if you take that time each day, it doesn't have to be long, it can be 10, 15 minutes, just to be in a quiet place and just to reflect and relax your mind, just to relax and breathe deeply. You can engage in prayer, you can engage in guided visualization, or you can engage in just mindful openness to the environment you're in, just sitting, feeling the breeze, looking at the sky, looking at the water, whatever the environment is, but you're not thinking about problems, you're not stressed, you're decompressing from that stress. That will protect your brain, your attention, your memory as you get older. Also, we've always thought that it's been the common belief that infants cannot perceive reality as anyone else can when it comes to fairness. They have to get older. A new study from the University of Auckland in New Zealand shows that infants as young as 17 months expect fairness and equity. That's correct. Children as young as 17 months recognize whether resources are being shared fairly. And this is the first time researchers have found evidence that infants so young are sensitive to principles of distributive justice. And a group of scientists at the School of Psychology studied the infants, and that's what they came up with. And so keep this in mind the next time you're dealing with young children, that if you give one child something and you don't give the other, if there's something the child should have or is used to having and you take it away, understand that they're aware of that. So it's just a reminder to look with equality in all things. I remember one of my very first lessons is when I was young, maybe 7 or 8 years old, we were going to go to the carnival. And that was a big deal in my hometown in the summer to go to a carnival. And so we cut grass and do errands and make 10 cents here and a quarter there and build up a little savings so we could go to the carnival. And so one day we were all five buddies that grew up together. We were going to go, and my father said, "You going to the carnival?" "Yeah, we're going to the carnival." "What are you going to do?" And we talked about all the rides we were going to ride. And so he says, "And how much money do you have?" So we hadn't thought about it, so we put our change out on the table, and so he counted it. And he said, "Well, okay, Tom, you have the most money here, and Tony, you have the least amount of money. So what is Tony supposed to do, Tom, when you're riding on a ride? Stand there and watch you?" "I hadn't thought about it," Tom said. He said, "Wouldn't it be better if we just put all the money in, divide it by five, and that way you can all go on the rides together?" It made sense. I'd never thought of that. Simple little lessons of life, that when you're in an environment with someone, think of what it means to share something. You know, it's like the person that takes so much food and there's nothing left, or a little left. Why not make sure that we don't gorge ourselves at the expense of being insensitive to someone else's needs? Just a thought. Also, for those of you who haven't exercised in a while, please start exercising. Duke University just completed a study showing that even short bursts of exercise throughout the day could work to reduce our risk of disease and death. And so you don't have to do a lot, but just running up steps, walking as fast as you can for about 4 or 5 blocks. But do that throughout the day. And those little short bursts add up, and they're very good for you. And finally, from the University of Vermont, new research published in the Journal of Personal and Social Relationships found that parental conflict can affect the emotional processing of children with potentially long-lasting negative effects. So when parents are arguing and the child's aware of it, it's not important to the child who's right or wrong, that there is anger, tension, and that creates a very fast-vibrating negative energy. The child absorbs that. The epigenetics, that a child's a sponge, absorbs everything that they see or hear. How your body language reacts when you're angry. Neck tightens, face gets flushed, arms tighten. Kids respond to that later in life. That can impact them on a subconscious level. So always be thoughtful whenever it's possible around children that everything you're saying and doing, the child is connecting to epigenetically. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 20 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back. And we're going to come right back into listening to Sean Parker, the past president of Facebook, and a man named Chamath, who was one of the leaders at Facebook, about how social media is ripping society apart.
Getting going, I had these people who would come up to me and they would say, you know, I'm not on social media. And I would say, okay, you know, you will be. And then they would say, no, I value my real life interactions. I value the moment. I value presence and I value intimacy. And I would say, well, you're a conscientious objector. That's okay. You don't have to participate, but, you know, we'll get you eventually. and like, I don't know if I really understood the consequences of what I was saying. Because the unintended consequences of a network when it grows to 1 billion or 2 billion people, and it literally changes your relationship with society, with each other, with, you know, it probably interferes with productivity in weird ways. It, God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. You know, if the thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them to really understand it, that thought process was all about, how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible? And that means that we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. And that's going to get you to contribute more content, and that's going to get you, you know, more likes and comments. I mean, it's a social validation feedback loop that it's like a, I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with, because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. And I think that the inventors, creators, you know, and it's me, it's Mark, it's the, you know, Kevin Systrom at Instagram, it's all of these people, understood this consciously, and we did it anyway.
That culture is missing here. So part of what we're trying to do to achieve those goals is like take really big, audacious points of view on the world and then train ourselves to be patient. And it's really, really hard. The entire society is set up to not be patient anymore.
And I'm hearing also a conflict with this like fail fast and learn mentality, where if you're taking a deep and big bet, like you want it to be the right one, how do you know when that's true?
I think that that fail fast approach works in consumer internet businesses, but I don't think it works for anything that really matters. Basically. Consumer internet businesses are about exploiting psychology. And that is one where you want to fail fast because, you know, people are unpredictable. And so we want to psychologically figure out how to manipulate you as fast as possible and then give you back that dopamine hit. We did that brilliantly at Facebook. Instagram has done it. WhatsApp has done it. You know, Snapchat has done it. Twitter has done it. So there are great examples. WeChat is doing it. There are great examples of failing fast is the right path to exploiting psychology of mass populations of people.
I want to bring us back to the point that you were making about exploiting consumer behavior in a consumer internet business. You said that this is a time for soul searching in social media businesses, and you were part of building the largest one. What soul searching are you doing right now on that?
I feel tremendous guilt. I think we all knew in the back of our minds, even though we feigned this whole line of like, there probably aren't any really bad unintended consequences. I think in the back, deep, deep recesses of our minds, we kind of knew something bad could happen. But I think the way we defined it was not like this. It literally is a point now where I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. That is truly where we are. And I would encourage all of you as the future leaders of the world to really internalize how important this is. If you feed the beast, that beast will destroy you. If you push back on it, we have a chance to control it and rein it in. And it is a point in time where people need to hard break from some of these tools and the things that you rely on. The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth. And it's not an American problem. This is not about Russian ads. This is a global problem. So we're in a really bad state of affairs right now, in my opinion. It is eroding the core foundations of how people behave by and between each other. And I don't have a good solution. You know, my solution is I just don't use these tools anymore. I haven't for years. It's created huge tension with my friends, huge tensions in my social circles. If you look at, like, you know, my Facebook feed, I've posted maybe 2 times in 7 years. 3 times, 5 times. It's less than 10. And it's weird. I guess I kind of just innately didn't want to get programmed. And so I just tuned it out. But I didn't confront it. And now to see what's happening, it really bums me out. Like, think about, like, there were these examples where there was a hoax in WhatsApp where in some, like, village in India, people were, like, afraid that their kids were going to get kidnapped, etc. And then there were these lynchings that happened as a result, where people were like vigilante running around. They think they found the person, and I mean, seriously? Like, that's what we're dealing with. You know, imagine, like, when you take that to the extreme, where, you know, bad actors can now manipulate large swaths of people to do anything you want. It's just it's a really, really bad state of affairs. And we compound the problem, right? We curate our lives around this perceived sense of perfection because we get rewarded in these short-term signals, hearts, likes, thumbs up, and we conflate that with value and we conflate it with truth. And instead, what it really is fake, brittle popularity that's short-term and that leaves you even more, and admit it, vacant and empty before you did it. Because then it forces you into this vicious cycle where you're like, what's the next thing I need to do now? Because I need it back. Think about that compounded by 2 billion people. And then think about how people react then to the perceptions of others. It's really, really bad.
It sounds like you're taking deep personal responsibility also in being a part of it.
I did a great job there, and I think that business overwhelmingly does positive good in the world. Where I have decided to spend my time is to take the capital that they rewarded me with and now focus on the structural changes that I can control. I can't control that. I can control my decisions, which is I don't use this shit. I can control my kids' decisions, which is they're not allowed to use this shit. And then I can go focus on diabetes and education and climate change. And that's what I can do.
Okay, that's a very important person making some, I believe, honest statements about his responsibility for what he created. When was the last time you heard someone who fed the beast, as he said, and it devours you? We feed the beast of the corporate community, the political ideologies of the left and the right. We feed it with a constant CNN or Fox or MSNBC. We feed it with the groupthink without stopping and asking, am I going to be a part of a groupthink or am I going to have an individual mind that can look at something for what it is? So he's at least taken his money. I don't know how much he's made, but it's probably a great deal. And he's applying it to things he believes will, like global warming, and that's a good thing. But we keep feeding the beast. We believe that the state is the ultimate protector, that the state, local state, our, like our local government, our state government, and our federal government, is there to protect us, to guide us, to help us. It used to. It hasn't in a long time. Are you aware that before the Revolutionary War, in Boston, 74% of all taverns were owned by women? We had women who had at one point the right to vote, and then it was taken away. Then it was forcibly given back, but only under duress, and only after three generations of women, including the suffragettes, fought for that. But it was more than the suffragettes. There were people, the Susan B. Anthony, many people fought for the right to vote, the right to own land. There was a time when women could own land. Who takes us into wars? The state. Who destroys nations? The state. Who does not pay reparations for slavery and the damage done to cultures and generations? The state. Who allows a city to become ghettoized? The state. And yet we turn to that same state and we continue to feed it as if it's there in a benevolent way for us. Now we need guidance. We need protections. We need to know that an airplane is properly serviced, that someone is trained properly to do a procedure, whether medical or a pilot to fly a plane. There are many places where we need this, but today we no longer have a government that serves us in a humanistic and holistic way. Instead, we are all serfs of the government. You have to have their permits for everything. They tax you for everything. And the taxation is not based upon proper representation. We don't get to say where 57% of every dollar goes, and that's the military-industrial and spy complex. We don't have any say-so upon having universal health care, so everyone is treated fairly and without bankrupting them. We don't allow alternative medicine to have any voice in our medical paradigm. We don't allow chiropractic or homeopathy or naturopathy, holistic nurses, holistic dentists. We think these are all fringe people. These are somehow pseudoscientific using incomplete science, when it's just the opposite that is true. We are living in where the truth is now considered a lie. We take people whose only crime against humanity could be that they told the truth about the crimes being committed by the state, and the media pillared them. Legislators pillared them. We wanted to put them in jail and did. Chelsea Manning, Karakawa, and others we slandered. William Benny, Ray McGovern, and Edward Snowden. Now think for a moment. Just stop for a moment and wrap your mind around this. A man who found that there were crimes against humanity being committed, against every American citizen, and he found this out. And he gave us this information, and then he is the one being chased to be incarcerated. He is the one whose reputation is destroyed, not the perpetrators of the crime. That's 1984. That's Stalinism with show trials. And now we're living in a Stasi state, the East German Stasis, where every phone was tapped, everyone was watched. And now we're living with a new form of internet McCarthyism, where you can use a completely fraudulent website like Wikipedia that chooses to isolate those that the deep state has said pillar these people, vilify these people, lie about these people, slander these people. You can get away with it. And they do. So we're now living where we have fed the beast to the point where it is devouring us. You know, when you're being eaten by a lion or a bear, you don't die all at once. Let's say the bear or the lion starts to eat your legs. You're conscious and fully aware that you're being devoured. You're in such shock you probably don't feel the pain. You're just numb or screaming. In a matter of minutes, you will be dead. But you watch the predator devouring you. All you have to do is stop being a part of any ideology and just be conscious and aware, and you'll see the beast is consuming us. Piece by piece. Fox, MSNBC, Pacifica, many of its programs and some of its stations. My contempt is substantial when people who claim to be supporting freedom of speech are the major perpetrators of censorship. When you see the people who call themselves right and are absolutely intemperate to any other point of view, condemning anyone, isolating people, Chris Hedges, isolated, Glenn Ford, isolated, and about 500 others, outstanding minds, because they have dared to question feeding the beast. How did we get the National Defense Authorization Act, the Patriot Act, twice? How did we get Obamacare? How did we get anything? And we're afraid to look at the reality. Now let's hear from some of the people out there who are expected to join in on this new social movement that's going on. And let's see what they have to say.
Dumber than ever before. The average IQ of Westerners has dropped by a staggering 14 points over the last century. We now have attention spans less than that of goldfish. Our children are also becoming stupider. Since 2006, the average SAT score has fallen 20 points. In Japan, high school students are at the same educational level as Americans who hold four-year college degrees. For 2 million years of evolution, our brains grew larger, but there's been a reversal. Our brains are now physically shrinking. The anecdotal evidence isn't that encouraging either. Take a look.
World War II. Ever hear of it?
No.
No? Never heard of World War II?
No.
Who were the two teams in World War II?
George Bush versus Saddam, whatever his name is. I don't know.
How many world wars have there been?
Three.
Can you tell me what democracy is?
No.
It's crap.
What kind of shit is that?
Name one country in Europe.
I don't know.
You don't know?
When the Founding Fathers signed the Declaration of Independence in 1776, what year did they sign the Declaration of Independence and break away from England to start America?
78. I don't know.
1978?
Yeah.
1978.
A country that starts with a U.
Utopia.
You went full retard, man. Never go full retard.
What do you think the TPP is?
TTP?
No, what is TTP?
The DPP?
The what?
TPP.
I have no idea.
Nope.
I have no idea what that is.
I ain't got a clue.
I have no idea.
I have no idea. Toilet paper products.
I'm being totally honest. I just don't care right now.
Do you know what the TPP is?
Nope.
What's TPP?
Toilet paper?
They're coming up with new ways to screw the people. Does that surprise you?
No.
Do you care?
Not really.
Why don't you bother to know about the trade?
I just don't care.
Who is Fidel Castro?
A singer?
99999!
You guys here with the March Against Monsanto event?
Actually, no, we just kind of appeared here.
Do you know what it is?
No, we're not, we don't.
Do you know what Monsanto is?
Nope, not at all.
Have you heard about Monsanto?
No.
GMOs?
No.
You have any interest in it?
No.
I think they make carpet.
Genetically
altered.
Carpet company.
Is that what?
No, I don't
know. Monsanto makes carpet?
Sure.
I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere, like such as.
Oh, you are so dumb. You are really dumb, for real.
When the Founding Fathers signed the Declaration of Independence, July 4th, 1776, we declared independence from England.
Yeah.
What date did they sign the Declaration of Independence?
The date? I don't know. What date was that? 19-something? Like 1914? 1876? I don't know.
Okay. I'm a little bit mixed up with the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which one is throwing the rocks?
How many sides does a triangle have?
Damn, four.
There's no sides.
Ishway?
What's Osama bin Laden most infamous for?
Osama?
Yeah.
Or Obama?
Osama.
I have no idea who Osama is. Obama, you should run for a third term because we need you.
Are you here voting for Obama's third term?
Yes, of course.
Obama third term!
What does the D.C. and Washington, D.C. stand for?
Dominican Republic.
Washington, Dominican Republic. The capital of America, what does that mean? Washington.
Washington, D.C. Washington. Obama. There you go.
Do you have a TV at home?
Yes, we do.
What does TV stand for?
Television viewing, that's all I know. TV, great TV.
Teleporting vortex.
There you go.
Teleporting vortex.
What is a mosque?
Don't have any idea.
You want to guess?
An animal.
You're a basic bitch.
Who is the vice president?
Vice president, oh my god. I'm gonna pass.
Are you stupid or something?
Which state does KFC come from?
What, the chicken? Yeah. I really don't know.
Okay, do you know what KFC stands for?
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Real voices. Some of the real voices. So, good luck with your new movement. Excluding anyone who might actually have experience with social change on important issues. But if you think all those people, and those are just right all in that movement out there, if you think those are the people who are going to guide America in a new direction, we're going to let teenagers or young people, and all the people asking questions, by the way, just now, were young people asking other younger people in their teens and 20s. We've got a big problem in this country that we don't take the time or have the patience to sit down and think through issues completely before we form our opinions. Let's now, before we go to our calls, let's hear from a woman. Her name is Lauren Southern. And she says, why I'm not a feminist? Before you think, well, that's stupid, listen to what she has to say.
Hello, my name is Lauren. A few years ago, I uploaded this photo of myself holding a sign saying, I don't need feminism because I believe in equality, not entitlements and supremacy. To my surprise, the photo was shared all over the internet, from BuzzFeed and even on Time magazine. I got a lot of support for the photo, but I also got a lot of hate and criticism. Most of that criticism from feminists who claimed I did not know what the word feminism means because feminism is actually a movement for equality. So today I wanted to speak to those feminists and explain why I'm still not a feminist and why third wave feminism is not, in fact, a movement for equality. I want to start by asking a question. If feminism is a movement for equality, why do we not see equal representation of both genders' issues? And why do we not see feminists complaining about benefits that women have over men in certain situations? I bet very few people watching this video right now know that around 100,000 to 140,000 males are raped annually in US prisons. This is more males raped than females in the U.S. annually, yet feminists remain silent on the issue. Almost half the domestic abuse victims in the U.S. and Canada are men, yet there are no safe houses for them, no court advocacy programs, no subsidized counseling or legal care like women. Despite being half the victims, they are basically ignored. Men make up 80% of suicide victims, 92% of workplace deaths, 97% of combat deaths, and 77% of homicide victims. Men are objectified, men are raped, men are mistreated. Men are held to ridiculously high societal standards, just like women. Yet feminists continue to place this blanket judgment over all men that they are all privileged, and all women that they are all oppressed. Yet, as a woman, I will almost always win custody of children in a divorce case. I will receive less than half the sentence a man does for the exact same crime, and actually have my rape and assault accusations taken seriously, and I won't be laughed at for not being manly enough. With one quick Google search, I can find a safe house in my area if I have been in an abusive relationship. As a woman, I am more likely to get a government or military job, despite qualifications, just to fill a quota due to affirmative action. And I am also more likely to get into a university because of my gender. So, if feminism really were a movement for equality, you would see feminists rioting about the 140,000 men raped. You would see them questioning the fact that women get less than half the prison sentence a man does for the exact same crime. Yet, we do not see equal representation of men's and women's issues. Despite popular belief, feminism is not, in fact, a synonym for equality. I'm not trying to say that men have more issues than women. My point is that both genders have issues. And to argue that feminism is a movement for equality and doesn't just represent one gender's issues is quite frankly ridiculous. So this is why I'm not a feminist. I'm not a feminist because I believe that both genders should be treated equally and both their issues should be addressed. I'm not a feminist because I believe I should prove that I'm worthy of a job rather than having it given to me to fill a quota. I'm not a feminist because feminists are unintentionally creating a world of reverse sexism that I don't want to be a part of. So I will stick to promoting equality and justice rather than a faux form of equality under the label of a gender bias word, feminism.
That was Lauren Southern. We can agree or disagree in part or whole, but it's the third wave of feminists, a lot of young feminists coming up who are challenging some of the notions of the older feminists and some of the older ideologies. And change is inevitable. We need equality. We need the same rights for each, and we have to start looking at how we accepted for so long the shaming and blaming of men for everything instead of looking at who should be held out, and that is the oligarchs, the powerful, the people who never fought in a war like Bill Clinton and George Bush and Dick Cheney, but would send men and women to fight in wars on their behalf, or behalf of the military-industrial complex, who would feed their own kids organic food in the White House, but then promote Monsanto's food, who are not looking at all the children who now are diagnosed with ADD and ADHD, who do not have such a thing, and yet are given Ritalin, 10.2 million every day, who are not looking at the suicides. And the number one weapon used in suicides is a handgun. Why is there no movement today for the 22 to 24 veterans blowing their brains out every day? They stick a gun in their mouth and they pull the trigger. No marches, no rallies, no movement, no legislation. And behind that is a war they shouldn't have been in, suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder they should not have been exposed to, hurting other people or watching others hurt other people, the rape, the pillage of people. If they did that in America, if a group went into Norwalk, Connecticut, or Stamford, Connecticut, or Greenwich, Connecticut, and they went into an upper white middle-class suburb or wealthy person's neighborhood, and they started treating people there as people were treated on a regular daily basis, 24/7 in Iraq, we would all be outraged. It shows the kind of institutional racism, the disconnect from what is human and what is spiritual in another person. That person comes back. You've conditioned them to be inhumane. You've conditioned the dark side of that person to come forward. And now they're on steroids. Now a lot of the men, 36,000 cases of rape in men alone. And women in the military are also raped, and they go to their superiors, and the generals, including women generals, have done nothing to stop this. So, where are their causes? Where are the causes for the men being raped in prison and then hiding that in shame and suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and hating everyone because their rights didn't count when they were in that gulag? And the latest study shows that nearly 39% of all prisoners are innocent, shouldn't be in prison, 39%. But we also see that the military-industrial complex is on a rip with the Clintons and others building privatized prisons. How much does it cost to incarcerate someone for 1 year in California? $76,000. Put another way, it costs more to see a prisoner through 1 year in California than to go to Harvard for that same year. Where are our priorities? Where is the depth of our understanding of what the human condition needs? Your turn. Talk back right now. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I've given you an opportunity to listen to some of the dumbest people, and yet we're relying upon those people en masse to cause change. That's not going to happen. Not with that kind of mindset. If you have no history of this country, if you have no knowledge of the cultures around the world, if you have a complete unawareness of people in this own country, then what bedrock of historical strength are you standing upon to move forward? And yet the people who would be there, who are there, who could help, are being rejected. There's a lot wrong, and we have to do something to correct it. 888-874-4888. And while you're thinking about what you would like to share and call in, I'm going to share some more information. This is from the ACLU. It's about the CLOUD Act. Now, the CLOUD Act is a dangerous piece of legislation. And the under-the-radar bill threatens the civil liberties and human rights of global activists and U.S. citizens alike. Despite its kind of fluffy-sounding name, the recently introduced CLOUD Act is far from harmless. It threatens activists, all over the world. And any individual listening in this audience, you could now, under the CLOUD Act, you could have the Attorney General, this Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, go after you. And that is what is happening. So once again, those who stand up are being targeted. And now they're institutionalizing it. The state is giving themselves the permission to bypass all constitutional rights of privacy, of free speech, Fourth Amendment, and just for being an activist. That should be of concern to everyone. Let's say hello to Joe from Queens. Joe, your turn.
Yes. Good afternoon, Gary. I just want to make a couple quick points. This thing about Facebook being divisive, I grew up during the white flight from the city's time. All the people in Nassau County wanted to kill all black people. They wanted to kill all the hippies. This is nothing new. What's new is that we're talking about it. We're bringing up the fact this thing, the media is not. Facebook is filled with this. It's filled with information because basically the media doesn't cover any of this. But this hatred, we had a labor union where a lot of the whites refused to reelect a black president. They said he did a great job, but they wanted a white union. The union fell apart, and these guys reelected the white ones and said, no, we still want a white union.
Okay, Joe, let's pull it back for a moment. The forum that I invite people in on is to share your points of view. Please think about what you're saying before you say that the older whites wanted to kill blacks, all blacks. There is no evidence of that. There is racist. There is bigot. There has always been in different classes, in different ways. But not everyone who moves to a particular environment, a suburb, is doing so because they're afraid of or threatened by a minority person living in the city that they once lived in. There are a lot of reasons why people move to the suburbs, and we cannot generalize by saying everyone who moved to the suburbs is a racist. That's an overgeneralization. All right, would you like to offer a different insight onto that, Joe?
There's a large part. Not everybody, no. There's never been...
Okay, but you said everybody, so I'm just asking you to think about what you say and how it could be perceived. All right, thank you, Joe. Albert from New Jersey, your turn.
Hey, Gary. Just want to thank you for what you do. It's been a long time, probably about 25 years since I actually called you. You know, with respect to the media and Facebook, everything that we hear now, I mean, you're right on point, obviously. You know, I know you do your research, and the people you have on are phenomenal, the ones that we just listened to. My take on this, though, is that I went to high school during 1973 to 1976, and with respect to the school shootings, I didn't know that we even had school shootings back then until at 59, I looked it up to see how many we had. It happens that we had, in the U.S., we had 16 people killed by 10 school shooters between those years. And nobody ever heard about it. It's not to minimize anything that's going on, but as you always say with the media, that they feed us what they want us to hear. It's repetitive. My feeling, as well as Facebook, the media is to blame. When we were kids, the TV went to fuzz at 10 o'clock. The lights went out. And now you hear the same streaming news feed over and over and over. You're right there on the front lawn with people who have witnessed killings for days. Years ago when something happened during the Vietnam War, and again, not to minimize these tragedies, but when it happened, Geraldo Rivera told us about it the next day. So we're so in the moment with all these things that I think the actual facts tend to get lost and they tend to get distorted. I mean, if we look at the fact that I believe it's when it comes to kids killed because of cell phone usage on the road. Now, I don't know where they draw the line with kids, if it's at 18 or school age kids. I believe it was 11 kids a day are killed because of driving and texting. So the hysteria that swirls around a lot of what we hear, it causes people to do things that I don't even think they have a real handle on. And Facebook is a big part of that, as you know, we heard from your, you know, the one of the founders. And I appreciate that information. It's great stuff.
Thank you. Albert, I'll just put this in final context before we sign off today. The media is not there to inform us. The majority of the media is there to indoctrinate us. They have to keep telling us the same information, showing us the same videos and the same photographs, so that we are in alignment, vibrating with their perception of that reality. Look at the Iraq invasion. Look at how everybody was so excited about. Look at the flashes and the flares going off at night in Iraq. No one in the media stopped to say, we're killing people. We're killing men, women, and children and babies. They're in those buildings. Instead, the media talked about how advanced the weaponry was and how exciting it was to be embedded, to be going there with the troops. These were pawns, willing pawns. You're not stupid about this. And we can thank David Halberstam and others from the Vietnam War who broke free of the confines of embedded with the military and went out and told us the true story, told us about My Lai, told us about the Viet Cong and the Phoenix Project. We don't have that today. The media doesn't tell us about what was wrong with invading Syria and right now being a part of the crimes against humanity in several parts of Africa where minerals are being mined for our cell phones, in Libya. We didn't have any American media there telling us, here are Libyans who are dying for political agenda and economic interest of those in power. Don't look at Hillary Clinton. Don't look at Barack Obama. Look at the people behind them and who benefits. Who benefited from Iraq? The oil companies. Who benefits from Afghanistan, the military-industrial complex. So you see, we don't have the truth from the media, and that's unfortunate. And that's why I do not look at the mainstream media anymore. I don't trust it. It has some very bright people who've compromised their principles and their integrity. That's why we have to protect the alternative media, the Truth Digs, the Consortium News, because and Natural Blaze, because these are the last resource that we can find that are giving us the facts as they should be. Thank you, Albert, for your call, and I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall, and we'll have more tomorrow. Have a nice day.